Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. I'm Eric Olson. It is time once again. Oh, I'm hearing feedback. I'm hearing myself in an infinite loop. It's driving me to madness. Oh, now I'm gone. Yay, I feel much better. Welcome to another edition of America's Most Haunted. Very, very excited. We have a bipolar star with us tonight. Not only does he rock ghost hunters in a manner that it needs to be rocked in, with those cool guy barbed wire tattoos. How hip is that, my friends? It's hip. But on the other hand, he is a indie horror movie filmmaker, and not just that, but a movie star at the advanced age of, I have no idea how old he is. I mean, he may just be in his 30s. But, you know, 24. He's not like 20 or something. It's Britt Griffith. Welcome, Britt.
How are you guys doing?
We are excellent. Of course, I did not introduce the world, because I already did it to you, so then that's why I get all confused in that infinite loop that came in. Oh, my God, my brain was bouncing off the walls. Teresa Argee is with us. Thank goodness, the world famous, the world's most famous haunted housewife.
I am the most famous haunted housewife, at least around here, that's for sure.
That's
You're
a
rumor in your own time, a legend in your own room.
Legend in my own mind, yes, absolutely. Welcome, Britt. Welcome to America's Most Haunted, everyone. Chat room's open. Anybody, if you want to get in there and have a question for Britt or comment, go ahead and go in the chat room, and it's going to be a fun show. We're going to hear all about Britt's split personality and his be a success.
I know, it's amazing. It is so cool. And I think he retweeted the first time, because I was just astonished. I was like, you know, of course, obviously, Ghost Hunters fan, seen probably every episode, I imagine, ever, but certainly every one in the last 5-6 years. And so, you know, I know Britt well, also Ghost Hunters International, big fan of that, saw him on there. But then all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, I get all these press releases because, you know, I'm a super cool guy and all. I get all these movie press releases, TV show press releases, music stuff, just everything, all the showbiz stuff, because I used to run Blog Critics and then the Morden Report and all this other stuff. So anyway, I get this just out of nowhere, just this random press release about this cool new movie, indie horror flick that looks like it's actually has excellent production value. It does not look indie per se, called The Black Dahlia Haunting, starring Britt Griffith. And then I thought, wow, how odd that the guy would have the same name as my Britt Griffith. But no, it's the same guy. So I tweeted it. I'm all bent out of shape, jumping up and down. And I know, and I think Britt saw it and retweeted it, and he shared in my excitement because it was about him.
Yes, exactly. I like to share about me.
So,
is there something wrong with that?
Where should we start? Where should we start? Should we start on the Ghost Hunters end of things, where things are rolling along, another exciting, wondrous season? We're in part two now. We're deep into it, or getting deep into part two of whatever season this is, 9, 19, 29, I can't remember.
It doesn't matter.
Or do we go into the film? What do you want to talk about first?
I say we flip a coin.
All right, here I go. Oh, my God, it landed on its side.
Okay, then whatever you want. I'm easy.
Well, let's do this. We love sci-fi. We love Maxine. We always want Maxine to be happy. So let's talk about Ghost Hunters.
Yes, we got to make Maxine happy, otherwise she makes our life rough.
And
all of a sudden, you find yourself doing PR stuff in Timbuktu, Alaska, in a deep freeze.
Like Monsters, Inc., which we just watched, of course, because we're going to go see Monsters University, so you got to watch Monsters, Inc. about 4 times first. Be exiled with the...
Yeah, she will exile you through the red door, the door you don't want to go through.
Right,
you'll
be on the
happy
sled.
And for the record, it happens to be season 9.5. We are in the middle of our mid-season return, and we're doing great. And the show is the fans are finally getting used to the new, more fast-paced format, and the episodes or the cases that we've investigated are pretty damn awesome. And I think the fans are taking to it because it's showing in our ratings. Our ratings are on the climb again, so it's all good right now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And I like the format, too. And I think it really did take people a long time to get used of, you know, get used to certain people not being there, people whose names will remain silent, because if we bring up the name, then it just, oh, my God, you know, there's tears falling everywhere. It's just a hellish nightmare. So anyway, that took a while, and just the rejuggling of the team and whatnot, you know, you could see there was some little bit of uncertainty perhaps in that first half. But I think you're right. I think we're moving along pretty smoothly. I think Jason has kind of stepped up and gone from being co-head to now he's confident and he's rocking as the father figure of the family, and Steve has kind of stepped up. And then there's you, and you haven't been around as long as everyone has, but I think what I really like about you is your combination of you're steady, you're calm, but you're not afraid to show personality. If something, you know, if something startles you, you're not trying to suppress it. And then you got all the tech stuff down, you got a great sense of humor, and you're intelligent. You're very well spoken, which, frankly, not everyone is quite as much as, say, for example, you are.
Well, I'm sure if you were to ask some of the editors, it's a lot of work to make me sound intelligent for them. So there's a whole lot of editing going on behind the scenes to make me smart. But, yeah, I am a jumpy person by nature, so apparently that plays well for the audience's entertainment factor. Although I will tell you this, you will never, ever see me dude run out of a location. I have never been scared. But, man, I have had the poop scared out of me for, you know, moments of sheer terror as a door slams behind you or a cat walks into a room or, you know, stuff like that. And when you're in the dark and you're in an unfamiliar situation and you're trying to be quiet and listen to what's going on and you're, like, all relaxed and all of a sudden something loud happens, yeah, you get startled, and you jump, and you Scooby-Doo across the room, we call it. The wrestler team likes to laugh at me for that, but that's just the way I am. It is what it is, and I don't hide from it.
Well, why don't we back up a little bit? Why don't we do your tale of how you got into paranormal investigation in the first place and how that led to Ghost Hunters? Were you on Ghost Hunters first or Ghost Hunters International?
I was on Ghost Hunters, went to International, and then came back to Ghost Hunters.
Got it.
So my tale, in a nutshell, Cliff Notes version is, my dad and stepmom owned a house when I was younger, 16, 17, 18, that was active. None of this corner of your eye stuff active. I mean, like me, my brother, my stepbrother staring at something, opening and shutting doors and moving across the vaulted ceiling walkway. Our yellow lab was freaking out, wouldn't let us upstairs. Turns out later on that my dad and stepmom had activity and had all kinds of issues there, which is why they sold in 2.77 years. And then through a little bit of research, the people that owned the house before had issues, the people that owned the house afterwards had issues. The place was off the hook haunted. So that's what kind of made me go, what is this all about? And then when I turned 18, I don't know about you, but I knew everything and moved out of my parents' house. And then it became, making rent, finding girls, and getting beer. And I kind of got away from the whole paranormal thing. But, you know, those stories always stuck with me. And then in 2003, I met a buddy, Dave Walters, down in San Diego. He had a team called Pacific Paranormal Investigation. We were telling ghost stories one night. He's like, dude, why don't you join my team? Come help us, help people, et cetera, et cetera. So I joined in an organized fashion a team. And from 2003 forward to current, I've been doing this in an organized fashion. Somewhere around, I want to say, the fourth season, three and a half, four, somewhere near, I met Jay and Grant at the Queen Mary at a paranormal convention, became friends with them, they liked me, and then about a year later of knowing them, Jay called and said, hey, dude, we got this really big case, you want to come out and help us out? Of course, I said, hell yeah. Took a week off of work, went out and did it, came back home, went back to work, and then they called a couple, like 4 weeks later, and I went out and did another one, and then they called another, you know, 2 weeks later and did another one. They got to a point where they'll call me out so much I had to make a choice, either my day job or go do this ghost hunting thing. And so I rolled the dice and I went for the ghost hunting thing on TV. And you know, for the last 4.5, 5 years, I've been traveling the world chasing ghosts. And it's been an amazing dream that, you know, Jay and Grant, basically offered me, and I took it, and it's been fun. So that's kind of my tell the Cliff Note version.
Got it. Teresa, I'm sure you have some questions.
Oh, I got a lot of questions. Are you originally from Southern California, Britt?
Born and raised.
Born and raised.
Me too.
It seems, you know, the TAPS team from Rhode Island and meeting up with them at the Queen Mary. And speaking of the Queen Mary, had you been there before that you did with where you met Jason and Grant? Is that a place that you had explored on your own before this time, or was it your first time there?
No, we. I spent most of my childhood in Long Beach, which is where the Queen Mary is at. I've been on the Queen Mary thousands of times over my lifetime. Yes, I had been on there before meeting Jay and Grant looking for ghosts and, you know, also as a hooligan kid, teenager, looking for a place to go have fun. I've been on the Queen Mary many times. And to be honest with you, I didn't really find it to be haunted until probably about 4 years ago when I had actually my first legitimate paranormal experience on the boat. So I've been on there. Amy and I were in the boiler room and we both watched a half apparition, lower half of a human being, walk by us.
Near watertight door 13, by any chance?
Yeah, somewhere in that neck. Yeah, in that area. And then Amy looked at me, and I looked at Amy, and I was like, "Did you see that?" She's like, "Yeah, did you see that?" I go, "What the hell was that?" She goes, "It looked like a half man." I go, "Waist down?" She says, "Yeah." I was like, "Holy crap! It's the first time I've ever seen anything on the Queen Mary." And then from that point forward, all kinds of stuff happened.
It's kind of amazing when you see that. With growing up, you grew up in this house, and I remember my first paranormal experience, I think, as everyone does. But besides the first paranormal experience, I think the first time you see an apparition different than just a paranormal experience. Was that the first time you saw an actual apparition, or that just happened to be the first time on the Queen Mary?
First time on the Queen Mary. At the house that I spent 2.77 years in, apparitions were a regular thing.
Wow.
I mean, literally a regular thing. It was.
That was in Long Beach.
That was actually in Irvine, in Woodbridge, a new development.
Got it.
It wasn't even old. It was like.
No, it isn't.
You know, it wasn't old at all. Now it's about 30 years old, but.
Did you ever figure out what was going on with the house or who was haunting it or what the deal was?
You know,
or?
I have gone back a couple times. I haven't been back in a new. Recently, but I had gone back once I joined the team. We were doing this organizing, dropped a couple cars to try and get in there, but no one ever called us. So unfortunately, we've never been able to get back in there. I do know that the house has been bought and sold like 30 times or some god awful amount like that. So there's something there's definitely going on that's affecting the people that are living there because the house has never lived in longer than 3 years. It seems like.
Yeah.
That's probably a pretty good indication.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Get the hell out.
Because as they said in Beetlejuice, my father never walks away from equity.
That's true. My father never does it. He did there. But
I love Irvine, actually. I used to DJ down in Irvine a lot for the college. I had one of the bigger mobile and club DJ companies in Southern California in the 80s, and we did a lot of college stuff. Yeah, I did a lot of UC Irvine.
What was the name of it?
It was Olson Entertainment.
Olson Entertainment.
My last name.
There you go. How
I was
unique.
All over. USC, UCLA, showbiz, you know, the sports team.
Well, I never went to college, so I probably never met you.
Well, I did other stuff too. Did clubs.
Okay.
Yeah, it was fun. I had an experience hauling my equipment, you know, my mobile DJ equipment for I think it was USC, I'm guessing. It was either USC or UCLA. They were having a formal on the Queen Mary. And as you know, it is not easy to get equipment on and off there because they have tiny little skinny elevators and they make you go way down to one end. And, you know, I'm getting lost. Anyway, I was on one of the little freight elevators, just tiny, you know, squeezed in. And I felt a very, very distinct presence, you know, right there up super close and personal. On that elevator, I was really eager to get out and go find the ballroom. It was just that big main ballroom where they were having the party. And, yeah, I mean, it's a long time ago. So I remember that experience vividly, but the rest of the details are somewhat fuzzy. But, yeah, I DJed there quite a bit, and I had some, you know, less specific, less objective experiences on it other times. But that time in the elevator, there was this very palpable presence. I mean, I felt as if I could touch it, but of course I did not want to touch it at that time anyway. And
oh,
I mean,
maybe it wanted to be touched. And you
it really may well have. At the time, I was just not open to such things at all. That was not my world view at that point in my life, I will tell you that much. And, you know, I was in my 20s and had, you know, just a whole different – I was DJing for a living, you know, and just running around doing all these parties and clubs and drinking a lot and being crazy and whatnot. And, man, I did not want any paranormal interference with any of that nonsense. I'll have
you know.
It could
help you pick up chicks.
Oh,
it's a good ghost story,
yeah.
You know.
Except I was married. That was the only drawback at that point.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's a problem. Yeah, that's a problem.
But I did not end up
staying
married. So let's leave it at that.
Okay, we'll leave it at that.
That's why
I had to move. That's why you had to move to Ohio?
Yeah, I had to move back to Ohio, yep. After,
oh, you're crazy, then I kicked your butt.
Well, I had the kids. I was very close to, I have two older kids, and now I have two newer ones again. And I was very close, and as frivolous, foolish, self-centered, idiotic, and drunk as I was in my 20s, I was still very close to my kids, and it was important that I remain. And when we got divorced in, I guess, 90, you know, she came back here, and she was taking the kids, so I had to follow. There was no choice. So it was the right move, although I'm still here 23 years later.
Wow. That's a long time.
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. But, of course, if I hadn't, I wouldn't have met
Teresa.
The
thing about though, is that it is not profitable. So it may be headed to the scrapyard at some point, they're talking about.
God, they've been talking about that for a long time.
Yeah, well, that the Piper has come home. Once the citizens of Long Beach voted down Disneyland and that whole water park expansion they were going to do there 10 years ago, that whole area all of a sudden went, uh-oh, what are we going to do now? So sadly, the Queen Mary may be going away, as haunted as she is.
That would be very sad.
That's a national.
Yeah.
People don't even understand how important that is to this country's history, and I hope to God that is not true and that doesn't happen, or if it does happen, doesn't happen for a long, long, long time. I mean, it's a beautiful boat. I was in.
Yeah.
I actually lived in California in Los Angeles area for about 5 years. I left shortly after the riots in 1992. That was kind of my cue to leave. And I, unfortunately, I was working so much while I was out there, I didn't have a chance to do a lot of sightseeing or ghost hunting, which was not very in vogue back then anyway.
No, we were called crazy back then.
Yes, absolutely. And I remember, you know, being ridiculed constantly just for wanting to talk about the subject, unless it was a fictional ghost story or something. But I did manage to make it back to the Queen Mary about a year ago, a little over, with my friend, and it was amazing. And in the short period of time we spent there, I mean, I was mesmerized, and I hope to God that's not true. What a shame. I think that's one of the big things that the paranormal can do that is good. Besides, like you said, we're not crazy anymore. Now we can talk about it, and the subject is out there. But the work that the paranormal community does to save some of these places and preserve some of these places is amazing, and I think a lot of people who aren't in the paranormal community don't realize the good that we're doing, and that right there would be a prime example of doing some good. If the paranormal community could get together and save that place, that would be amazing. So, Brett, why don't you work on that? I will help you. We'll use your name and your pull, and then I'll do some of the grunt work for you, okay?
There we go. Yeah, we'll get on that right now. The sad thing is for the Queen Mary is that it's a boat on water, and the upkeep is a huge overhead. And the reality is, I mean, if there's not a buck to be made, most people aren't interested. And the bigger reality is that California and her cities are so broke from overspending for so long that they don't have the money to preserve what they have now, let alone take on a new project like the Queen Mary. And it's really kind of sad that the people that we've elected have so screwed up our bank accounts that we can't save historical icons of our history.
I know people are struggling just to save their houses. I have family that still lives out there. My son is actually in the Navy, and he's stationed in San Diego. He lives on base, so he's not so affected by it. But my brother-in-law and sister-in-law live out there, and you know they're struggling just to keep their property, just to keep their house, and they've lived there forever because the economy's so bad, and they can't take another mortgage, and their property value has dropped, and you know, hopefully this market, the housing market, will bounce back. But it's a shame, and California is not for wimps. It's not a place you can live. It's different, and it's not a place for wimps. Like I could say the same about Cleveland, but for different reasons. So,
right.
And you grew up there, so I'm sure you have a special fondness for it. What about your family? I mean, it's got to be difficult for you on the road all the time and leaving your family. And I'm assuming that they're supportive, or you wouldn't be able to do it as long as you do. But is your family involved in the paranormal, or do they just kind of let dad and hubby go and do what he needs to do?
You know, I've been blessed that that my family has been into the paranormal and supportive of it. I mean, Ghost Hunters is a unique animal TV show that we film about 300 days out of the year. We're on the road. Most reality shows, most sitcoms, you know, they film 2 to 3 months. They get their season and they're done, so they're off for 9 months. It takes us so long to do these cases because we actually review all of our own evidence. We actually go to these cases. We're not just flown in and there for 2 hours and out. We're there sometimes 2 and 3 nights. It takes a while. It takes about a week per case to do. And so that means we're on the road 300 days out of the year just to be able to fill our lot of 23 episodes a season we do. I'm away a lot. Holly is for the most part, a single parent. Except that my paycheck shows up here and she gets to cash it and doesn't have to put up with my crap. So it might not be a bad gig for her.
Because you're a long marriage.
I pay for a pool service and we don't even have a pool. So I don't know what that's all about.
What is that about?
If they weren't supportive, it would be a lot rougher. I wouldn't be able to do it, bottom line. But they are, and it's you know, don't get me wrong, it's reality TV. I don't make, you know, I'm not rich by no means. I am a paycheck to paycheck guy, just like almost every other blue collar worker here in America. But it's a decent wage to justify doing it. And like Eric said in the beginning, I've kind of arced into movie making, you know, and it was a stepping stone into something bigger. I mean, I did this for 3.5 years, not realizing what kind of commodity I had with this being on TV. And then I live in L.A., which is the movie-making capital of the world. And it's like, well, geez, maybe I should capitalize on some of this. So now that I'm making these movies and they're getting picked up and distributed, you know, that's going to be my retirement. So it was a smart move. It's been scary at times. And right now it's kind of scary because we've been off for 3 months. We've been on hiatus for 3 months with no paychecks. But, you know, the movie thing, it's allowed me to do some of these movies. And those will kick in at some point, and it'll be another good ride. So it's an interesting, crazy animal ride to be on, and it's ups and downs with the family. But they've turned in their e-ticket for the ride. So there we go.
How many kids do you have?
I have three. I have 9-year-old twins, boy, girl, and then a 5-year-old. Oops.
Oops.
Yeah, I don't
well,
know
I have
how
a 9-year-old boy. I have.
But
a
you have like four
boy.
Kids, right?
I have four kids. Yes, from 9 to 29.
Jiminy, hey, nice spread.
It is
I got
a good 6 spread.
To 21.
He's what?
My kids range from 6 to 21.
Oh, another nice spread.
Two oopses in one plan, but
we have some similarities in our backgrounds. Yes, we. I have the very clean 2 and 2, and with a substantial difference between them. You kind of you kind of brilliantly segued, as if it were planned, from Ghost Hunters to the filmmaking. Now, as I understand it, because you are from L.A. and spent most of your time there, that early on you were involved with various aspects of filmmaking or TV from a kind of a behind the scenes. Is that what kind of enabled you to now make this move later on in life?
Really, no. I mean, in my early years, I worked in the concert industry and the TV production industry, mostly in the paging area, moving people around, doing paperwork, security, that kind of stuff. But I ventured off for 15, 16 years into the asphalt manufacturing industry. In all its glamour. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I made it through high school, the skin of my teeth. I mean, I probably shouldn't have gotten a diploma, but they gave one to me anyways because I was nice. But, you know, I learned a trade, to welding, fabricate, and run heavy equipment. And, you know, once I decided I wanted to make real money, I kind of had to walk away from that entertainment stuff because as fun as it was, it didn't pay the bills. It was very, you know, low-wage stuff. So I went to the asphalt world, and for 15 years-ish, I ran heavy equipment and welded, fabricated. I dug ditches for a living, basically. I was a blue-collar guy. But you know what? It paid six figures a year. So for not having a college education, it wasn't a bad gig. And then when I met Jane Grant and got sucked back into the TV world, that is what actually is really what helped me. And then having a long hiatus over October, about 2 years ago, I came home for like 6 weeks, I think we were off. And I made friends with Debney and Brandon, who actually are the executive producers of Black Dahlia Haunting. And Brandon actually wrote and directed and edited. And I made friends with them. And then I went back out to Ghost Hunters again for a while. And then I came back. And then I went out and I came back. And they're like, hey, let's make some movies together. And that's when we made Black Dahlia Haunting. It was supposed to be a short to see how well we worked together. It grew into this, you know, Brandon was writing it. He wrote it into a feature. And we're like, oh, hell, let's do it. Let's see what happens. And this Black Dahlia Haunting, which was supposed to be a short, just to see how well we worked together before we tackled a big project with money, grew into what you see now, where it got picked up by Origin Releasing. It's going to be distributed. It's video on demand, which started yesterday, except because of Canada's holiday, it's delayed a little bit. But it's out on video on demand now. It will be video on demand. Wanted exclusive rights to it for 60 days, so we gave that to them. And then it'll be in Walmart, Redbox, Target, Amazon, Netflix. It'll be everywhere, and we kind of look at each other sometimes, and this little movie that we made just from out of passion and just friends getting together wanting to have fun has turned into something that people really enjoy because we have screened it in front of about 1,000 people now. And it's funny because at first I was worried that people weren't going to be able to disconnect Britt Griffith from Ghost Hunters from this character that I'm playing, but I did a successful job at it, and at the end of these screenings, people will walk up to me and go, I used to like you, but now I hate you. Type of thing, you know.
Fantastic endorsement.
Yeah, which meant I sold my character. But
well, you're a likable guy.
Not in these movies, I'm not. But that's what you know. But that came from working with Brandon and Devin. I mean, Brandon's an amazing director, especially for new actors who kind of. I mean, I walked on the set and I'd never done acting before, per se. I mean, I was on Ghost Hunters. That's not acting. That's just me being me. But to actually be handed lines and have to study them and figure it out and hit your marks and all that stuff, you know, and then my first day on set, I walk on set with my script that I had my sides, and they said, yeah, throw those away. We wrote it. We rewrote everything. And they hand me new sides. It's like, it's like 3 pages of new stuff. But Brandon was so easygoing and obviously, and I think a lot of it's because he's an actor also. We were able to bang it out and get our stuff done, but we've made this product that people like. And what's interesting for us is because, and this is funny, because we took the Black Dahlia story, and you know the Black Dahlia story, right? Elizabeth Short cut in half in 1947.
Yeah.
Blood, all the blood let out, arms dismembered, nipples cut off, all that kind of crazy stuff.
Displayed
in L.A. It was Icky. It's L.A.'s most infamous unsolved murder story.
Although it's kind of solved now.
They think it's kind of solved now. But he's dead now, so, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, we put a paranormal twist to the story, pulled it into the current day, and what's interesting is when we screen it at a horror convention, they don't get the paranormal twist at all. They're confused by that, but they totally get the horror gore at the end. When we screen it at a paranormal convention, they totally get the paranormal aspect of it, but they don't get the gore at the end. So somehow we've managed to make a movie that is pleasing and confusing both sides at the same time. So, but we really haven't had any bad reviews. Everybody that's seen it, they enjoy it. They say they liked it. So,
and
that's how I started.
What is the bridge between those two? It's you.
Yeah, pretty much. Devaney and I. Devaney is the horror side. I'm the paranormal side.
Devaney's been in
40 horror movies.
Even with your friendship developing and mutual interest and all, what was the leap? Who made the leap to say, yes, Britt Griffith, you should star in this? You know, I mean, that seems like a fairly big jump.
That was a Brandon Devaney looking at the market and seeing what is popular and what's hot out there. They've been in the movie making industry a lot longer than I have, and Devaney is kind of really keen to the social media and reading the pulse of what people want, and you know, and kind of looking downwind of what's going to sell. And there's you know, paranormal was hot and horror is always kind of hot, so it was like, well, we have this friend, he's on Ghost Hunters, we can capitalize on that, and yeah, so let's go for this. And but for them to take me, who's never acted before, and give me such a big role was really a risk. And they told me that up front. They said, this is a total risk. We don't know if you're going to flop or if you're going to make it. But fortunately, I made it.
How did you prepare?
Oh, my God. You know what? There's an acting coach here in L.A., Hal. His name's Hal, and I can't pronounce his last name for the life of me. And I basically went to him about 11 times. I took about 11 hours of just hardcore personal acting, you know, set etiquette, and, you know, just I basically tried to learn all of his tips and tricks that he used when he was acting. And that helped me in the acting world a little bit. But to be honest with you, it was just the fact of being on Ghost Hunters and being comfortable on, you know, in front of a camera, just being comfortable with someone having a camera in front of you, and also ghost hunting. Because ghost hunting, we sit in the dark and we ask questions to nobody. And that's kind of what acting is. You have to be able to detach your brain and get into a character and perform to nobody for the most part, and if that works, it works. And for me, I was able to do it. So, you know, so it just, for some reason, it just clicked for me, and I do okay at it. I'm not the greatest by no means, but you know what? I'm not too bad either. So we've moved forward. I mean, Black Dahlia is where it's at, and now we've started this creature feature called either the Black Lagoon or the Dead Sea. We don't know what name we're going with yet. And that was another kind of a meaty role. But this one I executive produced, so I was double doing it. I had a lot of paperwork and, you know, keeping track of actors and keeping people happy and, you know, headaches that go with making an indie film on a low budget on top of acting. So that was a bigger challenge. But, you know, we're looking back at that, and Brandon is now editing that together, and it's looking bad. Can I say ass on your show? This is the internet,
sure.
Right?
Oh, hell yeah.
It's looking badass. And again, you like what you said. You said you watched The Black Dahlia Haunting, or you've seen clips of it, and it doesn't look indie.
No.
And that is Brandon's genius. He has taken these DSLR cameras and mastered them. And if you know that the camera you're going to use is this DSLR and you're the writer, he wrote to the camera. And we know that we're really not going to go theatrical big screen with it. These are all DVD, video on demand, it's your TV. So we don't need to have these big, massive red cameras and these Panavisions and these, you know, $100,000 billion cameras and whatnot. He mastered how to use these DSLRs. And that's why the look is so amazing and it's an indie film. It's because he mastered it. And he's also mastered editing. And that's how we're making these indie films on a low budget that look, they look amazing for what they are. I would put them up against any $100 million budget film.
Are you participating in the editing as well?
Yeah, I sit back over his shoulder and go, ooh, that looks cool. Oh, that's badass. How'd you do that? That's pretty much my total input. That's
you know,
his realm, man.
People don't realize how important editing is. I mean, it's just ultimately it's kind of everything, you know?
Yep. There's one movie that I did that I won't say its name, but had great potential, perfect timing for what was going on in the world, and was killed in editing.
The zombie
and you
one?
Were absolutely – no, I can't say it. And I haven't done a zombie one yet. But, editing is everything, I would think. Well, I shouldn't say everything. Editing can kill you or make you. Absolutely. And fortunately, Brendan knows how to edit. So, and the fact that he wrote it, directed it, and now he edits it, he knows exactly what he needs, which means we don't overshoot anything. We're in and out, which is nice. And I'm having a blast doing it. And it's a great little team we got. And, you know, we've got Black Day Hunting out. We've got this Black Lagoon that's about going to be out in December. And we're looking at our next movie already. I mean, Brendan has all the footage now from Black Lagoon, and Devaney and I, we're looking at the next project. And so we've started pre-production on our next project while Brendan finishes up this creature feature, and we're off to the races again. So my goal is to make about 97 movies before I die.
Wow.
My goodness. All right, so which is what is To Release a Soul, a Grim the titles I'm seeing are in your IMDb, To Release a Soul, A Grim Becoming, and The Zodiac.
The Legacy. Well, To Release a Soul is a short. That was done by Deftone Pictures. A Grim Becomes is a feature that they're filming right now, Deftone Pictures is, that I actually leave for on Friday, and I go out there for 2 weeks, and I film for them. I'm just an actor for them. But I did To Release a Soul just to see who these guys are and what they're all about. They asked me if I'd come out and do a cameo. I was in the area of ghost hunting. I said, absolutely. They're great guys, so I signed on to A Grim Becomes because they're a great guy. So that's kind of how that went, and we're filming that now. And it's about the Grim Reaper, and I like the premise of the movie, and I can't wait to see how it's the final product, if they can get what it's about. But it's Death, his job. There's a guy named Death, or not named Death, but there's a guy that his job is to reap our souls. He doesn't work for Satan, and he doesn't work for God. His job is just to collect souls, and he's got this problem with Satan's always on his ass, and God's always on his ass to get in the souls. It's like, it's just a job, man. I'm just moving product here. Come on, guys, give me a break. So, I just like kind of the way, the whole premise of it cracks me up.
It's hilarious.
He's not a bad guy. He's just got a job to do. You know, your number's up, it's time to go. I got to collect your soul.
Blue
Come
collar.
On, damn it.
Blue
yeah.
collar.
You know, he's just trying to work. So, that's what that is. Now, Zodiac Legacy, I cannot wait to film that. That is something Brendan has been writing all his life, supposedly. And we are waiting to have a nice big budget for that one because I want to blow a lot of stuff up in it.
So that's the next one that your team, the Black Dahlia team, is doing?
No. The Zodiac Legacy is probably two away. Two away because we want a big budget for that. I mean, we're doing great on what we got right now. We're doing with the budgets that we've been allotted for these smaller movies. We're happy with, but the Zodiac Legacy, I want like $1 million for that one, and that's based on the Zodiac, you know, that was never caught. And what's really spooky is when my hair is done just right and I put those rim glasses on and I shave off my beard and everything, I kind of look like the Zodiac sketch from the 70s.
Oh my!
That's why I'm playing the original Zodiac, and then we're putting a little twist to it, pulling it into current day. And
because it's a legacy,
exactly. But the script is so powerful. I love the script so much, and Brendan and Devaney the team loves the script so much. We want to make sure we do this right. This is going to be our Cadillac bells and whistles. No expense spared movie. I want to light
Amazing.
Up 40,000 gallons of diesel fuel and light up an entire riverbank like they did in Terminator.
Good God, man.
Yeah,
well, it's amazing.
That's what I want to do.
And it's even further verification or validation of your acting ability that you're being hired, you know, outside your immediate crew here. The fact that people want you to come in and just act in at such a short period of time, you know, it really is kind of amazing.
Yeah, I'm amazed at how this has taken off. I mean, I really am. I didn't think it would be this easy a transition, but it has. And I guess I'm doing okay at it because I keep getting callbacks, so I can't argue with it. But clearly I'm not getting the million-dollar roles, but you know what? I don't know if I want a million-dollar. I have worked on big union sets. I don't like them. Don't like them one bit. Give me an indie set all day long. I will take that for the rest of my life. Running and gunning, I don't ever want to hear the word no. On a union set, I hear no so many times it makes me want to vomit. When the director says, hey, I want to blow this building up, the answer is, all right, let's figure out how to do it. Not, sorry, man, the IRS owns it. No, we can't do that. I just want to run and gun indie set all day long.
Well, that's a lot more flexibility, and it's much more organic.
Yep, and it allows you to do a lot more fun, creative stuff, which is what movie making is supposed to be about. I mean, it's turned into such a business now that it's just boilerplate, get your shot, move to the next, get the shot, move. There's no creativity to it for the most part anymore. And directors are treated like crap now by these producers, these Hollywood-type producers that have come in, you know, and they got bored on Wall Street, so now they're in Hollywood, and it's like it's all about just making money, and who cares what the director wants, and it's like, you know, my job as an executive producer is to facilitate whatever Brandon needs to get the shot he needs. That's my job. And that's what I do. And you can only really do that nowadays on an indie set or a smaller company. You can't do it on the big production companies anymore because it's just a business now.
And there's just too much money at stake.
Yep. Well, maybe. But, you know. I don't know. When was the last time we had the real big super blockbuster that everybody falls in love with? I haven't seen one of those in a while, have we?
Oh, I don't know. It's, you know, I get my pendulum swings so widely. You know, I completely get everything you're saying about the auteur approach and having that kind of freedom and that sort of, I guess, ultimately it's control, you know, when you're,
yeah.
And I've done interviews with a number of, you know, indie filmmakers of various genres, and they always seem to be very excited about what they do and they love what they do. And one of the things you said that reminded me of something, the Soska sisters, do you know them?
Mm-hmm. I know of them. I don't know them.
The Soska, they said, really indie filmmaking, you know, relatively low budget. Theirs are going up, though. You know, they're maybe a movie or two ahead of you, I suppose, in the process.
Probably.
But it's a series of problem solving, and that's what you're talking about. You're using your creativity. You got to solve these problems because you can't just throw money at it.
Nope. You got to solve the problem. All more money does is means you spend more money.
Right.
And you saw the same problem.
Do you foresee a time when the filmmaking could supersede the ghost hunter role?
I could be. I mean, everything has a beginning and an end. I mean, for 9.5 seasons now with the same talent. I mean, can it go forever like Cops? I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? I mean,
all right,
maybe.
Teresa, your turn, dear.
Here's my 2 cents on the whole entertainment business. And
I want 4 cents.
4 cents. I don't have 4 cents in the game. I'm a paranormal investigator who does a radio show. So, but if I had 4 cents, I'd give it to you. Here's my thing. This is my approach to home investigation. Is my same theory as I feel about Hollywood and movie making. It should be about telling the story. It shouldn't be about big budgets. So you don't need a $100 million set to tell a good story. And the way I approach paranormal investigation, and I'm different, and I understand I'm different than a lot of people, I don't care about evidence. I'm not after evidence. I'm after the story. Why is this place haunted? What is the spirit, if there is one, trying to say? What is the story behind this wonderful place? And I think that's what movie making should be. It should be about telling a story, and you don't need a ton of money to tell a story. And I look forward to seeing the Black Dahlia and these movies coming up because I love being scared, though. Don't get me wrong. I love being scared. So if you can tell it in a way that's exciting and it makes you bite your nails and can suck the viewer in and suspenseful and scary and interesting with interesting characters, I think you have a success right there. And, you know, telling the story is what's important, and I look forward to it. And I love indie films. I love indie movies. And I'm glad to hear you're doing it. I can't wait to see what's next. It should be interesting.
Well, thank you. And I can't wait to see what's next, too. It's such an exciting ride. And, you know, it's that, I don't know, so to this day, the last 5 years, I step out of my body and look at myself, and I look at the last 5 years, and it's like, how in the hell did I get here? Because it's been one crazy ride. Because, I mean, I was born and raised in L.A., but I never expected to be making movies. I never expected to be on TV chasing ghosts. Never. It was just, but it always boils back to, if you don't roll the dice. I mean, I had a choice. When my daytime boss said, dude, you got to make a choice between this TV thing or your job here. And I looked at him, and I looked at the asphalt plant. I said, I can do this any day of the week. This TV thing is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And I said, see ya. I rolled the dice big.
Absolutely. And with the family to support, or a wife, I mean, that's a big gamble. People don't understand.
Yeah. I'm just a big believer that everything happens for a reason. I mean, I ended up at the asphalt plant, so I ended up into the paranormal. I ended up on TV for a reason. I met Brennan and Debony for a reason. We're making these movies for a reason. I'm talking to you guys for a reason. We may not know why now, but somewhere down the road it will reveal itself.
Oh, because we're going to save the Queen Mary together, Britt, remember?
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that. We'll have
to
do a documentary on that.
The Queen Mary. I can't wait. seriously, though, we should look at it.
She will appreciate it.
I think she would. Now, getting back kind of on the topic of the paranormal and ghost hunting, what is experience since being with ghost hunters?
You broke up there. You broke up there for a second. One more time.
What is the scariest thing that you've experienced since being with ghost hunters? Not something that you experienced in your personal life. Something that maybe didn't make it to the show, or one episode that really was profound and stuck with you. Profound experience.
Pissing Jay off.
How'd that go?
That's really. I broke one of his cameras. That was really scary. scary from a paranormal side. I don't get scared is the wrong word. I have been startled by ghosty stuff, apparitions walking by. Remember when Grant was in the where were they at when he looked in the window and there was like a face looking back at him? He dropped his flashlight and almost fell off his perch.
Yeah, I remember that. Was it Connecticut? Yeah. I think it was Connecticut.
Yeah, he actually dropped. Yeah, I think so. I mean, stuff like that. That kind of stuff has happened where you come around the corner, there's something standing there, and then it's gone, and you get that WTF, what the hell was that type of thing. Or like when you watch, the Colonial Inn, when that door shut behind me. I mean, we were in the dark for 45 minutes being quiet, trying to make contact, you know, little things happening here and there, and then that door cuts loose behind me and slams. I mean, of course I would Scooby-Doo across the room and indicate that scared the hell out of me. But something to, like, you know, like truly, you know, that fear that makes you want to run away, I've never really been scared. One of the toughest things I've done mentally, though, is the Essex County Mental Institution in New Jersey, when they put that camera on top of my head and sent me down into the tunnels.
Yep.
That was intense, because it was about 8 miles of tunnels down there. And they gave me this radio, and they said, yeah, if you get into problems, just call from the radio. And I got about 8 feet into those tunnels, and the radio was done, because I was surrounded by concrete and underground. And I was truly alone. I was alone. There was no producers with me. There was no cameraman with me. I was alone down there for probably an hour and a half. And I did get lost down there for a while. But the footage you see of me was because I took the time, because I knew I had to tell the story for you guys, to set cameras up and film myself while I did the EVP session, while I was walking through the tunnels. But yeah, that was mentally tough. But to be honest with you, I was more afraid of running into an animal or a transient. I was more afraid of the living than I have ever been of the dead.
And yeah, that's understandable. I did something similar for Waverly Hills. We were being filmed for a TV show, and I was sent down to the body shoot by myself with a freaking camera strapped to my back, pointing at my face. It was very uncomfortable and quite scary. So I knew I was alone, and I was hearing footsteps mean all sorts of crazy things. Maybe a better.
No, there are footsteps in that tunnel. I went down that tunnel with just me and a cameraman, which you saw in the episode where he had something breathe down his neck, and they actually showed that. Yeah, there's definitely something going on in that tunnel.
It's unbelievable how weird it is down there. I mean, it's totally different from the rest of the place. It's crazy. But what do you think is the most, name some of the most haunted places in this country for us. What would your top two or three be?
From my experiences on Ghost Hunters, Waverly Hills is top of the list, Clovis Sanitarium, top of the list, the Star of India, active as all get out. You know, geez, God, there's been so many great cases over the years that I've been a part of that it's hard to pick one. Jiminy Christmas, not Upseekin Lighthouse, the Pensacola Lighthouse, where the whatever it was walked right next to me, right friggin' by me, I think was my quote. God, I've just done a lot of cool places with a lot of great activity that, God, to pick one out is really unfair to the others. You know what I mean?
I have
experienced so much stuff. It's been amazing. And this season coming up, there's been some cool stuff happening too. I mean, you know, I'm enjoying that the freedom to do some out of the box stuff. Like when KJ and I went in the Lockport Caves, you know, we actually got to jump out of the boat and go into the water. And as a matter of fact, in the upcoming episode here, not next week, but the following week, is Helms Resort. You'll actually get to see me shirtless because I go into a pool and set some
equipment
up. Yeah, it's bad. I am so friggin' white. I really hope editing figured out a way to tan me up.
Are you translucent?
No. It's even bad in infrared. Trust me, it's just bad no matter how you cut it. But you know, I had to go in the water and set a full spectrum camera up underwater. I built this custom box to put the camera in and set it up, and it was in the water for about, you know, 4 or 5 hours, and then I went back in the water and I pulled it out and I set it up on the side of the pool, and I jumped out and I picked it up and turned it sideways, and all I heard was slosh.
Oh crap.
And there was probably about a half an inch of water in the bottom of it. Had I not turned it sideways, I wouldn't have gotten the camera wet. But because I flipped it sideways and put it underneath my arm to walk with, I got everything inside wet.
I was going to say, despite that, you're still a movie star.
Exactly. I'm making movies now. And to be honest with you, I'm having a lot more.
Following up with that, and you certainly, you know, we don't want to put you on the spot too much as far as naming locations, but, you know, you certainly named some really interesting ones. What is your personal philosophy? I mean, what do these things mean to you? What do these experiences mean to you? What do you think that whatever that is that's going on, what does that mean to you? What at core, you know, what is that reality for you personally?
Well, yeah, but one of the like top five questions is always the one within the top five is, do you believe in ghosts? And I tend to shock people with this, is that I don't necessarily believe in ghosts as we define them today. I don't think we have enough proof yet to say 100% beyond a shadow of a doubt, ghosts as we define them today, grammar not crossing over properly, exist. I also don't think we have enough proof to say that they absolutely do not exist. So I'm kind of in this quandary area. There's four or five other possibilities of what we're dealing with that it could be. Or it could be a blend of all. I mean, it could be ghosts. It could be aliens observing us. It could be the quantum physicist theory of many worlds, of just different universes and different realities going and bumping into each other. Or it could be the whole harmonics theory that, you know, that we're just sharing this planet with other living things and they're a frequency off from us, so we pass through each other like we're not even there. Every now and then that matrix glitches and we catch glimpses of each other or we run into each other. You know, there's a handful of theories out there that what we're dealing with could be other than grammar not crossing over properly. So all that wrapped up into one, I have experienced stuff that I cannot explain and has really shaken my belief system. But I don't know what the answer is yet. I don't know. I cannot sit here and tell you without a shadow of a doubt that, you know, there's life after death, that we don't just fade to black. But I can't tell you that we just fade to black either. Does that make sense? Or am I rambling?
Yeah, that's a very interesting answer. I've heard. I believe I've heard all of those various theories you mentioned, but I'm not sure I've ever heard them all at the same time before.
Well, because I get asked this question a lot, and it's made me think. And I've sat down with people and had debates over what is and what isn't. And the reality is, no one has died, gone across, got the book for the recently departed, and come back with it yet. No one's had that. No one has had that sit-down conversation with Jesus and said, yo, bro, what's up? What is this all about? No one has. So we don't know. But there are some strange things going on that we have all witnessed in our lives. Some of us choose to ignore it. Some of us choose to embrace it. And I've chosen to embrace it and try and document it, just like you guys have.
What is your gut feeling of what is most likely? What seems most likely to you, what these experiences are?
My gut feeling is there's a blend of everything going on. I think there is some kind of life force inside of us, our spirit, our energy, whatever. Everything's energy, but there's something about humans that make us different than anything else out there. So I think there's something to our soul. I really do. Is there a God? Is there a grand creator? I don't know. I think there could be. I mean, I have witnessed stuff and I have seen stuff that has made me, because I used to believe that when we die, we fade to black and we're done. Our energy leaves our body. We go and it somehow attaches to something else and we become something else or whatever. But now I think there may be something else.
Hey,
I just don't know what it is.
Are you willing to take a call from a listener? He's been holding for a while.
He's been holding on for 40 minutes, I just noticed.
Oh, my God. No, I'll talk to anybody. I don't care.
All right, we got Brian calling in. He has a question for you. He's at 832, Eric.
Brian, you there?
Hey.
Thanks
yeah,
for holding.
Hey, Britt, I knew that he was going to be on the show from Facebook, and so I listened in from the beginning, so it's no big deal.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Britt, I met you in Galveston. You and I and Dustin Perry and Dash Beardsley did an investigation of the Menard House. You remember
was
that?
I sober?
Yeah.
Sober? Okay, then yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. All right.
Yes, no, I do remember. I'm sorry, I'm just busting your balls. Yes, good.
No, that's all right. I just had a couple questions. When we investigated that place, did you get anything? And also, number two, I got another question about the science of ghosts as far as...
Okay. As to that investigation, I didn't have any equipment with me and anything to review, so did I personally get anything? No. But I was a part of several groups that had some interesting equipment fluctuations that were going on. That I hope turned into EVPs or some kind of documented evidence on the backside when they reviewed, but I had never heard back. So from that investigation, me personally, I never got anything from it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm hearing just stories instead of actual events happening to that place. All right. The second question. I loved what you said about the ghosts and what they could be. They could be actually something else, not just, those who passed on. But speaking of ghosts, we talk about two versions of ghosts. One who are residual apparitions who do the same thing over and over again, who do not know that they're dead, people who do not know. And then number two are the ones who are aware that they're ghosts, and they tend to take energy from electronics and us to gain potential. What do you think about these two options of this is the type of ghost here, they're stuck, or this type of ghost trying to take energy from others to talk to?
I think it's a plausible theory. I mean, who am I to say that, no, that's not what's happening? I have not had that sit down with Jesus to get all the answers to what we're dealing with. I think it's possible. I don't have any evidence or any experiences to say, no, it's not. So you could be onto something. I say, keep going forward with that research and make sure you document it well.
Yeah, it was just a curious thing because these orbs that we see in these vortexes and these ectoplasmic mists and things like that, they seem to be like levels of energy that these people will take on instead of just saying, oh, that's an orb, that's just another person, that's a vortex, that's another person. Actually, it's one person trying to manifest itself into higher levels, from a cold spot to an orb to ectoplasmic mist, a vortex to an apparition to where finally they can talk to us.
Could be. Could be absolutely right. Or it could just be dust in a camera flash. I mean, the reality is we don't know. All I can say is just keep your research going, make sure you document, and you stick to your protocol so you don't vary, so you don't inadvertently put fluctuations in your research. And just keep documenting, and maybe over time we'll be able to look back at it and find a pattern of what's going on. I honestly think that, for me, the environmental fluctuations, whether it's the cold spots, the EMF fluctuations, the static electricity, the orb lights that we see, I think that is the after effect of whatever paranormal activity just happened. Kind of like when you look at a still pond, and you throw a rock into it and you see the ripples going out, that's the after effect of the rock hitting the water. What we need to dial back to is that rock hitting the water, and that's the activity we got to document. And if with your research, if you can keep working back and you get to that point where you're seeing the actual activity, the EVP being placed on the recorder, that's what we got to get back to. And then we got to try and somehow be able to intercept that energy and talk to it.
Very interesting. Excellent answer. Very interesting theory, too, Brian. I think that's very interesting. The working through the various levels of energy, I think that absolutely could make a lot of sense. I think we still have one more person on, even though we're off the air in terms of live, but it's still all recorded, and the great majority of listeners hear the show from the archives anyway. So
let's answer some questions.
Is 516 there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh my
Excellent.
God, it's Alexis. I know that voice anywhere.
Hi, Brian.
Thanks, Brian, by the way. Excuse me. Thank you, Brian. We'll move on. All right, Alexis. Who's Alexis?
Hi.
Some chick?
Hi.
Some chick. Hi, Alexis played the Black Dahlia role in the Black Dahlia Haunting.
Oh, how cool.
Yes. Thanks
so
for
she's calling. She's an actress.
Movie star on the line. Awesome.
Yes, yes, I am indeed a movie star. And Britt, I have to say that I love the fact that you on several occasions you have said, and to be honest with you.
And to be honest with you, yes. I'm glad you're keeping
that's
it
my
line.
Right.
We have a few sayings on set that we kind of get stuck into. Right now, yes. I'm really bad stuck on the reality is. I say it all the time. When we were shooting Black Dahlia Haunting, Alexis was stuck on, to be honest with you. So we kind of count each other every time we say something over and over again. So we count it and then we make fun of each other.
Yes, yes. So I'm very proud that my evil plan worked. You've been saying it a lot in the interview.
Yes, bitch.
I miss you, Britt. Hi.
Hi. Do you have a question or did you just call to harass me?
I called to harass you. Devaney's like, call in. And I'm like, perfect opportunity to get a hold of Britt.
Oh, well, are you saying I don't return your phone calls? Sorry, Eric and Trudy, you have to listen to our conversation here now.
Oh, it's our, you know, it's our pleasure. We love pulling back the veil. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
No, I wanted to call in, and I heard you guys talking about Dahlia and stuff, and I just, you know, Dev wanted me to call in, and I thought it'd be an opportune time to, you know, Britt pretty much covered a lot of it, but if you have any questions, I mean, shoot away.
Alexis is crazy, just so you know.
We're dying to see the movie. We can't wait. And what you said, yesterday it was released, but something happened in Canada, so it's going to be another day or two. Is that right?
Well, yeah, July 1st is our big release. Well, July 1st is Canada Day, and our distributor for Video On Demand is based out of Canada.
Oh.
None of us here in America realize that that's a big party for them. That's like our July 4th, apparently.
It's their July 4th.
Yeah, so everything shut down up there, so we didn't get released today. It's going to be apparently it's this week. I had got a whole education this morning on how video on demand platforms work and that our distributor makes it available to the cable stations all across the country, and then they have someone in their office that goes through and goes, okay, let's upload this. They choose the way they're all uploaded, and they go through and they pick the movies and set them up in the order, and then it just takes time to render. So we could be rendered first one out and be up right now, or it could take 3 weeks from now.
So is we need rendering what they do to animal fat?
Yeah, yeah, that too. It's kind of gross. And it smells. God, I used to drive by the Farmer John's pig factory in L.A. every day for work. And that's where they would render. Yeah, Farmer John's. That's where they would render all the fat and get rid, burn it off. Basically. Oh, God, you talk. Instant gag reflex.
Well, you know where I'm from originally is San Pedro, not too far from the harbor.
Yeah,
so
another horror.
The other
place.
Side of the harbor from Long Beach.
Yep.
So there were some interesting smells.
Did you get the stench off the harbor?
Well, we got the stench off the fish canning plants.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's and my dad when he was a kid or a teenager, I guess. Worked at one of them, and he said he literally breathed out of his mouth the entire summer. It was a summer job. He said he never breathed out of his nose the entire
time. That's amazing.
Time. Never even got used to it. You know, because you know about olfactory fatigue. You know, your nose is the sense. Your sense of smell is the one that is kind of overwhelmed and fries out the fastest. That's why you usually don't smell something for very long. But he never got it. That's how strong it was.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's amazing. Yeah, I don't know how they do that. I don't know how those guys work in that. But you're right. I mean, you know what? I worked at an asphalt plant for 15 years, and anybody that ever, family members, whatever, friends, that would come to my work for whatever reason, they would get there and go, oh, my God, how do you work in this? And I'm like, what? I don't smell nothing. Because I just got
right?
used
to
the
yeah,
oil smells and the fumes. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, well, that's a bad smell too. You know, wafting off of the road once it's been laid. And I like all the sexual imagery in asphalt talk.
Oh, there's a lot of it, and it's a bunch of guys, and there's a lot of I'm gonna shut up before I get myself in trouble again.
That sounds pretty hot, actually. Keep talking,
a bunch of hot, sweaty, strong men working shovels, tattoos.
Isn't that like
hey,
a pedicure commercial or something?
works
all right,
for me.
I have a question. I do. I have an acting question. So in playing the Black Dahlia, now were you the original incarnation or the reincarnation?
Well, no. I portray the Black Dahlia. I haunt Devaney Penn's character, and it's my. Obviously, you haven't seen the movie yet, but I'm the flashback scenes of Dahlia, and in this movie, which you know, not to knock the other films that have done Dahlia, with this film, Brandon Slagle was able to really show how Dahlia was really murdered, whereas. With the other films, they seem to color a prettier picture, whereas...
They sugar-coated it. The other movie sugar-coated Brandon went right. It was very salty. It was very truthful.
Yeah. Like I said with other films and De Palma and all that, they made a flawless movie where Brandon likes to make flawed movies. And with flawed movies is truth and a grittier... darker character, which is also truth, and that's what you will see in the Black Dahlia Haunting.
And what I wanted to ask you specifically is, did you ever feel threatened by that character? Did you ever feel a sense that character, which is so iconic, was taking over you? I mean, did you ever feel?
I had to, and I don't mean to cut you off. It's just I already know where you're going with this, and I already have an answer. And the answer is I've had several situations that happened to me while researching Dahlia. I had to actually put away the research for 1 month because when I started it, I remember coming home one night and all my lights were out in my room. And I put the light on real quick and I turned to my right and there was my sliding door has a mirrored door, a sliding mirrored door. And when I put the light on, without an exaggeration, I saw Elizabeth Short's face in my face for 1 second and it went back to my face. And
she called me in the middle of the night. About that, freaked out.
Save me, Britt.
We also had weird equipment breaking, too. Stuff that shouldn't break on set that would break. There were some interesting things that happened around making that movie, especially when we were dealing with the Black Dahlia spirit itself.
Were you filming anywhere near where the murder happened or where the doctor lives or any of that? Were you near the original?
Here's an interesting thing to that. We filmed all in L.A., and we finished the movie, and then 3 months later, ghost hunters went and investigated the Soden house, which is where the doctor lived, which is where Elizabeth Short, and they think a number of other women were murdered and dismembered and bled out.
And there's a scene in The Black Dahlia Haunting with my scene where Holly Jensen, Devaney's character, is walking. She gets lost, and that's the first time that Dahlia is the scene in the film. And my character, I'm standing next to a fire hydrant, and that's where they actually found her body.
Yeah, and the fire hydrant you see in The Black Dahlia Haunting is a fire hydrant you see in the photos of Elizabeth Short.
In the photos, yeah.
Wow.
And the other interesting thing was that entire neighborhood, which is very well kept where it's at, the only house in that entire neighborhood that was for sale was the one was the lot where her body was found.
Yep.
And it looks like it's been for sale for a while.
Yeah.
See, I vibed on you, man. My question ruled.
Yes, it did.
But no, there were other incidences that did happen to me personally while researching her. And but it was never, I don't know, I can't explain. It wasn't a negative vibe. I think and I hope and I've said this quite often that I hope this movie brings her spirit to closure a little bit, because like I said, we actually show how she was murdered and people need to see that. And I think I want to believe that that's what she wants people to see, not to say like, oh, you know, look how disgusting it is, but this is what happened to me. And people need to know that, because people really, people can look at pictures on the internet or what have you, but in film, you never really get to see the full picture. And so I hope that we do something for Dahlia, at least for her soul to rest.
Well, I hope so as well. That would make it even that much more worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to believe that. I mean, anything can change. I can hang up the phone and some weird shit can happen. But from the research that I've done and working with Brandon and Britt and Devaney and everyone, it was always a very good vibe on set and off set. I mean, that's why we're all working together. I'm in the creature feature as well. And so it's just we form this really great group of people that I absolutely adore. I just wrapped the creature feature with them, and it's just I love them all. I really do. And working on Dahlia was basically a launch pad for that, and I'm very grateful for everyone.
Well, thank you.
So Eric, you want to be in a movie?
God, yeah. Are you kidding me?
We can
with my ego.
Oh, another person who missed you having an ego. I love it. So do I. I do the same thing. And people look at me funny.
In the movie,
I don't want to be in a movie. I want to be in all movies.
No, I need to be in the scene where Eric is killed, and I need to participate, please.
Yes. We will kill him in a very horrific way.
That's kind of mean.
It'll involve duct tape and cattle prods. Are you down for that,
Teresa? Or Shoehorn and Crisco.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know. There's something going on with me, because that's kind of hot, too.
Oh, God. Well, you are a Sagittarius.
Well, now apply the asphalt.
Oh, this show
When did we land into the gutter? Holy crud.
Well, honestly, I think I have to take blame because I think as soon as I called in, it just went from professional to what men in what? That's great.
Men shoveling asphalt.
Well, we will encourage people to listen to the additional 15 minutes, I assure you.
Oh, awesome.
All right, well,
having said that,
I know you guys are West Coast, but it's 11:15 for us. I have to eat dinner, work out, and take a shower, and run around the house, and stuff. This is amazing and really had a wonderful time. Thank you so much. Really great
talking with you guys. Anytime.
Really appreciate it.
Real quick, hey, Britt, did you mention Days of the Dead?
No.
Oh, yes.
That's in Cleveland, isn't it?
No, wait. A real quick plug and then you can work out because I'm on East Coast time also. This weekend, July 5th, in the main room at 11 a.m., the Black Dahlia Haunting is going to be screening at Days of the Dead Indianapolis. Jab Pictures is doing a 24-hour film festival, all horror, 24 hours nonstop. And we're going to be in the main room. The cast is not going to be there. We were unable to attend, but Bill Philput has been wonderful. He's the head of Days of the Dead. And we wound up being part of Days of the Dead in Los Angeles, all of us, a few months ago. And it was so successful. Bill approached us and said, we want Dahlia to be in Indianapolis. So July 6th, not 5th, July 6th at 11 a.m., Dahlia's going to be in the main room.
Is Indianapolis close to you guys?
It's close-ish.
Close-ish. Not too far. Driving.
A couple hundred miles.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah.
I was hoping you guys could pop over and see it, but guess not.
I am absolutely going to see it. You're right. I have watched kind of anything I could get my hands on, especially since I found out it was you. I've seen, whatever's been available on it. And as I say, it looks like it's very compelling. The acting looks, just instantly I'm drawn in. And just the look of the film is very slick. I mean, it looks like an expensive movie. I was really impressed. And that's honest. And I'm a fairly sophisticated media critic. Film and TV. I have a fair amount of understanding of, what goes into it and how it's made and whatnot. And I thought it looked great.
Awesome. Well, when you watch it, I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
I absolutely will, and I will certainly tweet about it. And we're finally, once we finish the book, we're at the very tail end of America's Most Haunted book. We've picked the 10 most haunted locations. We're on the last couple now. As soon as we're done with that, we are going to have – we'll finally put up an actual America's Most Haunted site. So, where all the Twitter stuff is so brief – we will be able to start stretching out a little bit, and I'll be doing a little more as far as reviews and whatnot, and
awesome.
That is one that will be apropos.
Perfect, I love it. Well, I will figure out the video on demand stuff. I will definitely get you a screener of it so you can have it for your library.
I would love that. And I would appreciate that very much. I really would. And I'm very excited to see it. And I am actually very familiar with the story, originally just being from L.A. I mean, I remember hearing about it as far back as, when I was a kid. But then, several of the shows have been there, including Teresa, our friends, who were just there. The one that I live tweeted all the shows. You know what I'm talking about. The one that was just on bio.
Our Haunted Encounters, our friends from Haunted Encounters.
Yes, Haunted Encounters. And
Jordan,
I thought they did actually quite an excellent job on the Black Dahlia. And that's where I kind of learned quite a bit about the house. And they had the son of the doctor. It was very creepy.
Yeah, that house was creepy. That house was not right.
Very creepy.
And it's worth watching the Ghost Hunters episode, but the big thing that, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but it got left out, was we actually brought in a sheriff cadaver dog, and they took that dog down to the basement, and it hid in two different corners as to being human blood flesh being in there.
Oh,
I'd say at this
on.
Point there's not much doubt that that was the place and he was the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you'll never really know, but, you know, it sure seemed to answer the various questions. And, boy, that was a pretty twisted guy, that's for sure.
Yeah, that dude wasn't right in the head. But then, you know, there's a lot of people out there like that, sadly, that are, and we just, you know, we just don't deal with them properly.
I think you're right. There's got to be a better way than the options we currently have. All right.
Yeah,
well, anyway, thank you again so much. Really lots of
thank
fun.
You.
These shows all go quickly, but this one went faster still. The speed of light.
Yeah. Well, if you need anything, don't hesitate to call. You guys have my number now.
Thank you so
got
much,
it.
Brett. And, we'll be in
thank
contact. And you get started on that Queen Mary stuff, and I'll be right
yeah.
behind you with it.
I'll get right on that.
Your spare
and
time.
We wish you both all the best luck with the film. Really
I
hope
like
it does.
Thank you.
And thank you
super
for being
well
part of the show.
And
to
opens
have you.
Doors.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you very
bye,
much. All right, bye.
Bye.
Good night,
have a great evening. Thank you, everyone.
You too, guys. Bye. Thank you.
Farewell. All right, Teresa, well, that was lots of fun. We ranged far and wide. Oh, she's already gone. All right, good night. We'll talk to you soon.